Your phone's giving you away. Should you get a black phone and Obama stop spying on your prime minister? Maybe. All that and more on this week's episode of Walking Back the Cat, episode 5 for Sunday, January 19th. I am Justin Eckhouse.
And this is Ashley Jones, and joining us today we have a special guest. Please introduce yourself.
I am Molly Wood, and I'm super excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
I feel like that introduction was the, what's that old 50s TV show with the guy who would be like, Mr. So-and-so, introduce yourself. Anyway,
oh, this is your life?
Something like that.
Yeah.
All right, but that is not at all the point or why we're here today. We're here to talk about privacy and security, and there was a lot of that news this week. We are going to start with our president. So President Obama this week basically addressed, I'll say he addressed all the Snowden leaks, but he would not probably put it that way.
I think he used the word Snowden once in the entire speech.
Yeah.
Which was, I believe, his first ever direct reference.
I think so. I think
so. Since the leaks began.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he went through and basically talked about, you know, so he commissioned a report that came out a couple of weeks ago that actually recommended pretty aggressive cutbacks on the various spying programs. And now he has, I guess, had time to review that report and has said what he actually wants to happen. You know, he came out and said the reforms I'm proposing today should give Americans greater confidence that their rights are being protected and that our intelligence and law enforcement agencies will be able to maintain the tools they need to be safe. So let's run down a couple of the key points here.
Well, the biggest one, I think, has to be the change in the collection of telephone metadata, which I think is Section 215, right? What did he change there? He said we're not going to collect it, right?
Not quite.
Ah.
He said that the government agencies should not store it. He didn't specifically say who should. He asked for recommendations for, you know, over the next couple of weeks from a task force to come forward and say who should store it. So it's not clear that we're actually getting something better there. So we're not getting aggregate storage by the government, but they could turn around and say, hey, we're going to have some third-party company store this.
But, I mean, I think that's definitely what's going to happen is it's already going to stay with the telcos because that's already there, and so they'll be the de facto third party, and then you might get something worse, like a commercial third party.
Yeah, those third-party mercenary type companies have worked out pretty well in terms of waging war for us, so I can't imagine what could possibly go wrong. If a purely commercially interested and, by the way, lowest bidder type company gets a hold of all this metadata.
There'll be no problem because they'll just drone any leakers.
I thought we were staying away from politics.
Yeah, no. We'll take that out later.
But in our lead-in, we talk about how that he says he's not going to spy on allies of the U.S. leaders. Allies'
right.
leaders is...
The United States will not eavesdrop on heads of state or government of close U.S. friends and allies, quote, unless there's a compelling national security purpose.
Ah, okay, so that's where the maybe comes in, huh?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you guys. That is where the complete lie comes in.
But, well, that's where he gets total deniability, right? He's like, well, right. I had a little sneak out there.
I mean, as it turns out, it's in our national security interest to, in fact, spy on them all the time. But if it were not in our national security interest for some reason, we'd probably stop.
Yes, there was this phone call where Angela Merkel was calling Domino's to order a pizza. We did not listen to that.
I believe it's Angela.
Angela, okay, sorry. And they probably don't have Domino's. Do they have Domino's there?
Maybe.
Some, okay,
Mickey D's?
So they're not going to collect metadata. Someone else may or may not do it for them. They're not going to spy on leaders unless they need to.
They need to.
Yeah, so what else? The U.S. government, this one is actually kind of interesting. The U.S. government will, get a judicial review. So the FISA courts. So basically he sort of said that he does want some oversight there that isn't there today, which is something we've talked about for a couple of weeks that I've always said, hey, I want some oversight. And we'll talk about the EFF's reaction to this because they weren't totally satisfied with that.
What?
But, but they are never satisfied with anything.
No, that's the
Let's
point.
Just jump to that, actually.
Okay, so there's another article that came out shortly after, which is that the EFF had released a scorecard before Obama's talk on Friday, and it was how they were planning on rating him on different areas that they felt were important. So, Justin, what was his score?
There's just no making them happy. I mean, 3.5 out of 12.
Wait, all those bald-faced lies didn't make them happy? I don't understand.
No.
Well, I mean, I think it's a combination of both, that there's you know, all the little outs and exit strategies, not exit strategies, but little, like, you know, gotchas that he has to his statements. And then there's some things that Justin feels like they just out and out added that are irrelevant.
Well, and then there are huge elements that they didn't touch on at all. So the only point where President Obama got even remotely good scores or the best possible score in EFF's opinion were in those reforms to the FISA court, reforming the court itself and then opposing the FISA Improvement Acts and imposing some oversight over the FISA court. But that doesn't ignore the fact that – or sorry, that sets aside the fact that the White House completely ignored – the thing I think that has so many security experts really upset, which is sabotaging cryptography standards.
Yeah, I mean, that one really, we've talked about that for a couple of weeks. And yeah, I think that's terrible. And it's just so short-sighted, right? They're charged, the NSA is charged with protecting American security, right? And they are deliberately actually doing the opposite, not just because they want to spy on foreign leaders, or that's why they're doing it, but it doesn't seem like a net positive for sure.
No, it's short-sighted. When you reduce the efficiency and trustworthiness of encryption, you're, you know, shooting your enemy as well as yourself in the foot. So it's kind of not worth it.
And he didn't. I mean, that was a major recommendation of that group, was please end efforts to actually weaken commercial cryptography or compromise security keys. And the White House didn't, you know, Obama didn't bring it up at all.
And that's actually covered in both articles.
He's going to get to it later, right?
Well, there's something to that, because he said that he's having an advisory committee give him input on certain areas, and they're going to go back to him on March 28th. So there is some potential more reform that we could see at a later date.
So one area where I disagree, number 8 with the EFF, is provide a full public accounting of all of our surveillance apparatuses. So I have repeatedly called for, I want some oversight, but I don't want necessarily me to be the oversight. I want some trusted third party, like public respected privacy advocate, even the EFF. But does that mean that we have to tell the public every, you know, surveillance apparatus that we have? That seems like a national security hole in itself.
Well, but if you look at the point itself there, it separates the general public from being public information, or in this case, he says, appoint an independent committee to give full public accounting of surveillance programs. So what they mean by that is there may be someone that you have actually nominated or voted for, Justin, that will have all the public disclosure, but you yourself won't have the secret information of where the bugs are in your room that he's listening.
I don't know. They're pretty clear, I feel like, saying there should be a full public accounting, not like semi-private or semi-public.
So everything that the committee knows will be public?
That's what I take their meaning to be, and I don't feel like we necessarily need that. But I do think certainly more than Congress or the way Congress has handled it, because there has been no oversight. You know, for one, it seems like Congress doesn't necessarily, I mean, they care now because people care, but they have certainly not exercised any oversight. And when they have tried, the NSA hasn't actually told them anything, as far as we could tell.
Well, and the bummer about this is that Obama and NSA don't really have a leg to stand on. And every tinfoil hat wearing person now has said, see, I told you, we're right. So the EFF, which is substantially more mainstream than a lot of conspiracy believers, they have a substantial leg to stand on. So it's hard for, I think, it's hard for the administration currently and hard for the NSA certainly to feel this without having it have some weight.
It's true, because it does feel like an extreme response at this point for EFF. And like you say, Ashley, they're a pretty mainstream organization. For them to be saying, we need a full public accounting of everything that we've been doing in terms of surveillance is extreme. Like, you're right about that, Justin. It does seem excessive and possibly even dangerous. But given that the White House continues to resist meaningful reforms like protecting national security whistleblowers, like actually taking action against members of the NSA who flat out lied to Congress, in some cases knowingly, whether they were or were not talking about classified programs, they still lied to Congress with basically no repercussions. So I think that they're making the argument that lacking any other meaningful change or meaningful outcomes to this behavior, the only thing you can do is just reveal it all and at least admit all of the types of things you're doing, even if it's in broad strokes.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, for a long time, nobody even knew the NSA existed.
That is the best trick, right?
So there's probably some other version of the NSA, you know, that the EFF is like, can we just please know?
The OSA?
Out there? And I'm not sure that's such a great idea, but it's true that, like, these guys have been acting essentially with complete impunity, and it's produced some pretty dangerous results.
Yeah, and there's more to come from this, right, in terms of a lot of the Snowden documents are citing technology and programs that are 3, 4, 5, even 6 years old. So presumably those programs are still active and are, you know, have more rich features now. So there's something to that. Well, hopefully we'll see something where the EFF and the conspiracy believers can come to a comfortable medium that the agency or the current administration can provide them with something more than nothing.
So I think since everything that I learned from watching Alias has become true here, the secret agency is probably called the Covenant.
Oh, right. Okay.
But like it was called the Covenant, but then its name changed halfway through to the whatever the other one was.
I don't know what that was either.
Damn it.
All right. Well, we could talk about this all day. We could do a whole show just on this, but we have some other stuff to scare you with.
That's right. Something a little more close to home or maybe close to what's on your desk charging right now or possibly in your pocket if you're walking out and about, which is that there is information that your phone is sharing with commercial entities without you knowing. So I think we didn't talk about last week some iBeacon technology that Apple has partnered up with where stores can track where customers are in their store. But what this is a commercial entity that has deployed, I think, in a 3/4 mile radius or maybe something more substantial than that. 3/4 mile radius. And what it does is it tracks anonymously, quote unquote, anonymously, unless you opt in, people with their cell phones and their wireless, the Wi-Fi on the cell phones, register with a effectively an access point, even though it's not an access point. And then because each cell phone has a MAC address in there, that is a unique ID. And so it knows as you're walking about town that you went to the gym at this time, and then you went to the bakery at this time, and you like to get a fancy latte at that time. So by the time you come back to another store, they can say, oh, well, we have a special, you know, deal for folks who like to go to the gym. Do you like that? So I think the big privacy scare here is that if your phone has wireless on, which most people do so that it can easily get good coverage when they're at work or when they go to their favorite cafe or go to the gym, which is all the same thing we're talking about, that they can track you without you knowing. And it's, you know, this has sort of been expected for a while.
Quote unquote anonymously.
Quote unquote anonymously. It is interesting that they say, I mentioned it briefly, but you can opt in to this. I'm not sure why you would.
No, you don't opt in, actually. Let me clarify that.
Okay, so break it down.
You go to a cafe,
okay,
and you log into Facebook, and without opting in, as far as I understand, you now your MAC address from your Wi-Fi access point is linked to everywhere you've been, and the company has that information. And the company that we're talking about here that's sort of on the forefront is called Turnstile, and they have this active in Toronto, I believe. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and if you log into this, they run basically a Wi-Fi service. So their Wi-Fi service is almost like a front, right?
Yes.
We'll exactly. Give you Wi-Fi. And then once you log in, we collect your name, age, gender, social media profile if you log in with Facebook using this Wi-Fi service. And then use that information plus all of this other traffic data that it gathers from sensors embedded in all these different businesses to categorize you in terms of your lifestyle. And then eventually serve you ads.
So,
or deals or coupons or whatever.
I'll just go out and say I'm okay with this. It's a little crazy, but I think you can't trust any company out there. And if you want to protect yourself, I think it has to be built into your device. I think we can't rely on the laws and the good, you know, privacy-loving nature of business owners to protect us. I think it's your responsibility.
Well, but I disagree there, because I think there's an assumption that if you're walking around and you're not, you know, installing an app from the Apple Store or from the Google Play Store that says, I would like to get deals when I walk around, or I want to be tracked when I walk around, that there's the assumption that you are a private citizen and that no one's tracking you. You know, if someone walked up to you and said, I'm doing a facial tracking, you know, project, can I take your photo to track your face?
There's no assumption of privacy in public.
There is the assumption of privacy in public.
There's actually not. I mean, sort of legally speaking, there have been, especially recently, rulings that have determined that you have no reasonable expectation of privacy in public.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's counterintuitive, doesn't make any sense, but I think there is no assumption, and therefore, I think really what it comes down to is the device maker should make it very easy for you to turn off your Wi-Fi or any other trackable mechanism when you go out in public. Because it can be done, and you can even automate it. Like for Android, there's little things that will say, okay, when I leave my home Wi-Fi network, turn my Wi-Fi off. But it's not easy, just like many different privacy things are not easy.
Well, the big difference, I think, I am not particularly concerned about data collection in the aggregate. So I am okay if my anonymous usage habits, if a sensor in a yoga studio is pinging my phone to find out that this phone went to a yoga studio, and that data is collected in the aggregate, and the knowledge is that this phone has done these certain things.
And it does a good downward dog.
But there's that, which is like step A, right? But step B is turnstile, which is where you log into a service using your Facebook credentials, and then your social profile and name and age and gender are tied to your phone's activities.
So no longer aggregate.
Suddenly, yeah, that gets out of the aggregate and into the specific. And that I feel like you should tell people you're doing.
Well, maybe there's a small terms of service that when you are signing up for the free Wi-Fi that they say, by the way, when you sign in with your Facebook thing, I haven't done the research to see on this specific instance.
And no one has, and no one ever will, because no one reads terms of service.
They make it clear that they do that, right? They have a little terms of service, and it lets people know that they're collecting data. It doesn't necessarily say what they're doing with the data. But I got to say, you know, all of that aside, like, this is genius. This is a really smart sort of Trojan horse data collection technique. Offer a Wi-Fi service that uses social media credentials, let people know you're going to collect that activity, and then do a bunch of money-making stuff with it. So we can expect that this kind of service is going to get more and more and more common, and that every time public Wi-Fi is available, you should be fully cognizant of the fact that it is really just a Hoover in disguise.
Well, and also what Justin said is that you should get good at turning off Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, and probably, hopefully, the phone manufacturers will have shut down my information when I'm outside of my house, or maybe ever. I don't know.
Right. Like the black phone.
Like the black phone. Oh, yeah. Speaking of which.
Look at that segue.
Nice.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is the black phone. I like the black phone. This is a product of a company who Phil Zimmerman, who is a famous cryptographer, invented PGP. He's co-founded a company to create this Android-based phone that basically will be just sort of a totally your phone, presumably easy to use for consumers. So there's a lot of ways, we've talked about some of them, to encrypt your calls and to encrypt your texts, but not seamlessly integrated into your phone. The funny thing is, Phil Zimmerman, and I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, the first VoIP call that I ever made was to Ashley, and I was using a product called PGP phone, and this was, what, like 1990?
1990.
No, 1994,
right, okay,
So anyway, he although he's done tons of encryption stuff for text, has long wanted to encrypt voice and communications, has been very important to him. And now, probably at Mobile World Congress, which is February 24th in Barcelona, will release the Black Phone, which will basically ship with sort of by default encrypted phone calls, encrypted text messages, as well as VPN services. So, you know, if you're accessing crazy stuff, you know, from your work Wi-Fi or from wherever, that will be routed through potentially some server in Asia or Europe so that no one knows where it's coming from and creates some, at least, privacy. And I like this because people will not use things like this unless it's easy.
And also people who buy this, it's easy to use, so they know that they can spend the money to get a phone that's secure. One thing that I didn't know from reading this article is that it mentions that Phil Zimmerman also was a co-founder of a firm called Silent Circle, which offers a lot of existing services you can use on Android and I believe iOS to do encrypted calls. But is the Black Phone going to use Silent Circle? Because one thing about Silent Circle is there's a monthly fee. So there might be, for Black Phone, a upfront fee to get the hardware, a wireless fee to get on your network with Verizon or AT&T or whoever, and then possibly a third fee to use Silent Circle's services.
Yeah, there's no details on that. I assume we'll hear more at Mobile World Congress. But I think it's reasonable to presume that there will be fees. I mean, most VPN services charge $5 a month or something like this. But I think this will be especially big for, you know, countries where there's, you know, political oppression and they, you know, have taken to Twitter or other services and have had trouble getting encrypted stuff out or sending pictures, making phone calls, journalists in these countries. I don't know. What's your take on that, Molly?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think this has a lot of promise. I think that, like I said, you know, Turnstile is the kind of technology that is commercially brilliant. And a lot of commercially brilliant technologies are extremely uncomfortable. But I feel like for every poison, there's an antidote. And that is kind of the sort of the technological arms race that we now find ourselves in. So if somebody can come up with a commercially viable product that, yeah, will absolutely be adopted first and foremost by, you know, security freaks like yourselves, gentlemen. And
Thank you.
And journalists like myself and absolutely people who need sensitive information exchanged in a way that can't be tracked. I think it's really powerful, and I think it's even more powerful if it becomes available as a series of consumer tools, whether those are apps with a monthly fee or the whole enchilada, the entire phone. I mean, it was really only a matter of time before there was a commercial solution to all of the privacy problems that are created by commercial exploitation.
Right.
That's how capitalism works in a nutshell. So it's so great.
Yeah, I mean, what I'll be interested to see, and Phil Zimmerman has a history of this, is open sourcing everything. And we've talked before about you can never really truly trust that your encryption works well unless it's open sourced and peer reviewed, et cetera, et cetera. Otherwise, who knows what backdoors the NSA has put in there.
Exactly. Thank you, RSA.
all right. Let's...
It's so funny because it's not.
Exactly.
So. Healthcare.gov. You want to tell us about this, Ashley?
All right. This one is interesting. I read it and I kind of wanted to read some more technical details. So there's been a security firm, TrustedSec, with one of their founding members, David Kennedy, has told the House of Representatives Science Committee that there are a number of potentially dangerous security issues with healthcare.gov.
That 18.
Have 18. That only one of which has been fixed since he's reported it, that a number of these issues are there and the site is vulnerable and that they're going unfixed after a certain duration. I didn't actually pick up how long, and that this obviously is used by millions of Americans and that the information on the site is extremely sensitive. Healthcare information along with banking information are probably the two most sensitive areas of information on the internet that you would not want to get out. So
let me just stop here and ask this question. So all the NSA amazing stuff, plug this into your computer and I can transmit radio waves of everything you type, even though your computer's not connected to the internet, you know, 100 miles away. All that stuff is amazing and really cool, and although we're scared of it, we do have to realize as technologists that it's pretty amazing feats that they have done, right?
Yep.
Right.
Why couldn't they hire those guys to build
healthcare? That's what I'm saying.
I'm like, where is this going? Are you making me feel bad?
Yep. You had them like three buildings over.
Yes. Just saying like, hey, guys, how about we work on some legal stuff?
Well, but I think that's indicative of how the government works.
Time.
We have a, yeah, you wish. You have a massive, massive organization, the government. I mean, the NSA alone has however many thousands of people, and that the right hand doesn't necessarily know what the left hand is doing. So, I mean, healthcare.gov already suffered, you know, being massively underpowered for the first however many months of service it was in. And then it took however many more months to fix it. And so now it's just up to speed. And I think security audit ought to have been a, you know, 1.0 feature, but it looks like it's going to be a 2.0 feature.
You know, protecting, like you said, no big deal information, like your entire medical history and every vulnerability that you have as a human.
At least you can't be denied for existing conditions anymore. So.
I will say, okay, I wish in retrospect that I hadn't, but I did sign up for healthcare through the portal, the healthcare.gov portal or Connected California. And I will say, as a potential, as hopefully a dampener to the total fear, that I didn't have to put any medical information in, or really even any payment information. It's basically, it's social. It's all of the basic stuff that you normally put into a site where you're signing up for something: name, address, social security number. So it's potentially vulnerable information.
It's all
but
the stuff
I,
that routinely gets stolen.
Yeah, exactly. It gets stolen all the time. Like, you know, I did not believe the information that I gave over to be significantly more sensitive than anything else, because the health background information doesn't come until you're actually interacting with the insurance provider.
Mm.
So I would love for TrustedSec to go ahead and also audit Blue Shield and Blue Cross of California, but it's possible I just don't even want to know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question it raises for me is not even specifically about this, but there's how many different government agencies that hold information that they collect from us, like the IRS, and what kind of people get hired for that, and what kind of security audits are done. I would hope that IRS would have some better security than clearly healthcare.gov has, but is there any reason to believe that they do?
Well, and in this day and age, getting even an appliance, a literally a machine to sit there and go and attack your site and list the vulnerabilities in the most responsible way it possibly could, right? It's not going to go sell your secrets, is not that big of a deal. It's something that is pretty commonplace for commercial entities to do, which is just to go, you know, hire one of these. They even have them in the cloud. You don't even have to install anything. It's the cloud. So I think that, you know, certainly a site like this that's new, where new translates to untested features, ought to have, you know, thrown the flag high in the air that this is foul play and we ought to have it audited by something security, be it machine or man.
Are running low on time, so let's just say that Target is offering a free year of credit monitoring service. So if you shopped at Target and you were part of the hack that we talked about last week, then the email they sent you is real and it's not fake.
That's right. It's not a phishing email.
If I had a nickel for every company who has accidentally exposed my credit card information and has offered me a free year of credit reporting, I think that I could get a free year of credit reporting for every year that I could ever hope to live on this earth.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing because they do provide identity theft insurance with this as well, which can be a pain to try and deal with. So
go sign up.
Check it out. But I want to talk about...
All right, you wanted to skip that one to get to the next one. All right.
I
well,
love the fridge so let, much.
Let's do this two ways. So it's been widely reported that a series of refrigerators, if not thousands of them, hundreds of thousands of them, were participants, unwilling participants in sending mass amounts of spam. This was all over the internet. Everyone was covering it. And then, as it turns out, maybe something is fishy about this?
Yeah, so not just refrigerators, but all sorts of different appliances.
The Internet of Things.
Yeah. And we talked about this last week, and it's certainly probable that people are hacking into them and that they're not very secure as a whole, right? And you should be scared, and you should change the default password on your refrigerator and your router and your TiVo and anything else you have in your house that's connected to the Internet, your smoke alarm. But Ars Technica did some digging, and I think they actually did a pretty good job here. So the company Proofpoint put out a press release,
right?
Which I'm sure has directed mass amounts of traffic to them, talking about, you know, how all these refrigerators are sending email spam to all these people. And what Ars Technica kind of, they point out a couple different things. And the first thing that they point out, which also occurred to me, is that all of the Internet of Things, these are really low-powered devices that can't do a whole lot. So if I'm going to spend time hacking something, why would I hack your refrigerator to send me email other than it's kind of cool, when I could just hack your old Windows XP machine that I'm sure you have on the same network?
Exactly. Dozens and dozens of refrigerators might be worth one of your XP machines that is way more easy and way more vulnerable.
Also, there are definitely not dozens and dozens of refrigerators connected to the Internet at this point. I'm sorry. There's maybe a dozen worldwide.
Right.
Like the thing that seemed so implausible about this to me was that there are, you know, there are extremely tiny numbers of smart appliances out there that are actually most, 80% of smart TVs, which is actually a useful feature to have in a television, some 70 or 80% of them aren't even connected to the internet at all.
Right.
So let's assume that 142 smart refrigerators have been sold.
You can cite Molly on
generous.
That. Yeah.
Yep, could be generous. You could probably safely say that 14 of them have been connected to the internet, which is not really comprising like a super scary botnet. Also, what is the problem if my refrigerator is part of a botnet? Like the biggest problem, I feel like, if your computer has been turned into a zombie, is that, you know, it's kind of annoying and you get like performance issues or whatever. But do I care if my fridge is part of a botnet?
You do, because it's going to go and connect to Amazon Fresh and start ordering way too much milk. Have you thought about that?
They probably wouldn't do that, though, because there's no financial incentive to do that.
Right. Like, everybody gets all freaked out. Like, my internet refrigerator is part of it. Now it's been compromised and it's sending spam. Like, other than my data cap, I'm not sure that that's actually a big deal.
Let me give you a couple other reasons why maybe this is not true.
Okay.
So Proofnet claims that each refrigerator sent only 10 messages, and they were like, all right, that's kind of ridiculous. Why every other hack we've ever seen, you get the infected machine to do as much as possible.
As fast as possible.
Right. And then the third thing is they said, okay, how do you know these were devices? And this is going to get a little technical. I apologize. They said, okay, well, we connected to the IP address that the emails were sent from, and we found a device answering on, you know, the mail port or such and such port. But the way that most people work is you have, like, your internet, your router in your home, and that has multiple devices behind it that share one IP address. And so this way of determining what actually sent it is very no company out there that they spoke with actually uses this, because you could have one device send it, but another one actually answers when you try to connect to that IP address.
Dubious at best.
So, it's silly. I'm shocked how the mainstream media has picked this up, and I only found one article that at all, you know, discussed the potential falseness of all of this. But Proofpoint is mentioned nonstop in hundreds of articles.
Good job, Proofpoint.
All right, I think
I do like the term that they no doubt coined, thingbots.
Thingbots.
Because Internet of Things, and then they're bots,
gotcha.
And then they did the thing.
Good job, Proofpoint.
It is not the last you'll hear of that,
That's right.
I'm sure.
Okay, I think
probably trademarked it as we speak.
All the time we have in our show. Thanks so much to Molly Wood for taking some time out of her busy schedule to join us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
If you have an email for us, you can send it to info@walkingbackthecat.com. You can get all of our past episodes at walkingbackthecat.com, or send us a little donation there to support the show. And you can follow us on Twitter. We are WalkBackCat, and I am not my real name, and Molly is?
Molly Wood. Totally my real name.
And Ashley is nowhere to be found.
Still nowhere on Twitter. Still in the middle of the Nevada desert.
All right, I guess that's all we got this week. So we'll see you next week. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.